Amazon Web Services, or AWS, is the largest cloud computing provider in the world, offering over 175 fully-fledged services from data centers globally. Millions of customers, including the fastest-growing startups, largest enterprises, and leading government agencies, are using AWS to lower costs, become more agile, and innovate faster. In this episode, I am joined by Jonathan Bocker to talk about his experience running Dart Code on AWS to combine the developer experience benefits of Dart with the operational benefits of AWS. Jonathan is a software development consultant in Sweden with professional experience in AWS. Jonathan has a fascinating story to share about his work creating the Dart AWS client packages and how he's using them in production to run diagnostics on his app. Jonathan, welcome. Thank you for joining the Dart Developer Show.
Thank you very much.
So we have a few topics to cover. I want to start off by talking a bit about your background. What do you do for a living?
Well, I've only worked in IT for 3 years, but I started out as a Java backend developer, and then I moved to Android and React Native. But now I'm working with backend on AWS, usually Node.js.
Okay, perfect. And how did you hear about that? When did you get started with it?
I was doing my I was doing a bachelor's thesis and had some time over. I was reading Reddit or Hacker News or whatever, and I found this post about Flutter. So I just read about it and I thought this seems great, because I've been struggling with Android for a while during my studies, and I never got a hold of Android. I never got it. It's quite complicated for a new beginner to get a hold of how Android works. But Flutter just seemed to make sense.
Yeah, definitely. I had a similar experience. By using it's just very easy to get started, and the experience is really good. So great. Thanks for telling us about your background. I want to jump into talking about AWS. What is AWS for those who don't know?
Well, I guess you have to compare it to how you usually make internet services, like backend services and such. Like usually in the old days, you had an HTTP server, which you deployed on a server somewhere on a computer that was facing the internet. And well, AWS has kind of like found what people usually do in their backends and just made small services out of everything from databases to things like content delivery networks and stuff. They have a service for everything that you could possibly need in the backend. So that's just a huge service shop that you can like ball together like Lego.
Right. And I understand that AWS has different levels of services. On one hand, you could rent out a virtual server, which they call EC2. And then there's a different type of way that you could tap into computing, which is called AWS Lambda. Could you contrast the two and talk a bit about the benefits of this approach using AWS Lambda?
Yeah, sure. So EC2 is what you, as you said, it's like a virtual private server. It's your server is running as if you have a computer in your house, and you deploy your application onto it, and you have to take care of it. And if there's any problems, you might have to upgrade, or you have to manage it yourself. This Lambda is more, they call it functions as a service. And the idea is that you as a developer should not care how it runs. You should just deploy your code and it will execute on the best way possible that AWS will look, make it run as good as possible and scale. If there's a lot of users entering your website, let's say, on a short notice, it will scale and take care of it for you.
I can see that being a great benefit, given that you'd have to think about, well, what do I do if I get if I launch on Product Hunt and I get millions of users? It's not something that you need to worry about. So that sounds really great. One thing to consider, though, is that when working with AWS Lambda, you're working in the AWS way of computing. And it's a very different mindset when you may be used to developing something on your laptop, moving it into some kind of a staging environment, and then deploying it into production. With AWS Lambda, you have to adapt that approach slightly. Could you talk a little bit about that, some of the drawbacks, challenges, potentially, of working in that environment?
Yeah, sure. So if you, for whatever reason, wanted to hold state in your server, let's say you, I don't know, want to hold a connection or want to hold some object for a very long time in your regular server, it's not possible to hold any state in a meaningful way in a Lambda, since it has, for example, 15 minutes maximum runtime. So it will actually shut down after 15 minutes or less if you specify it. And you can still have a development environment for your Lambdas. So you can still deploy it in a different setting and try it out, and then deploy it to a production environment. So that doesn't differ very much, but it depends on how your architecture looks like. Like, if you have a lot of Lambdas that runs independently and you want to try how well they play together, let's say, if they call each other, it can be hard to recreate the environment locally. So if you have a Spring Boot application you run locally, you can test the whole application at once. But if you have a lot of Lambdas, it can be hard to simulate that locally without deploying it.
Yes, I see that. That's one important consideration. So in those situations, how do you deal with it? Do you have maybe a separate account that you do this testing all online?
Well, there's a couple of different approaches. You can always unit test. So you can always record the events that you can actually record an event on a deployed application, and you can save it and use it in unit tests, for example. And there's also a tool from AWS called SAM. It's a serverless application model, I believe. And that's a tool it goes to a great extent to simulate a deployed stack locally, which you can call by calling localhost. So you can, if you have all your Lambdas in one stack, you can still try it out locally in a fairly good manner.
Okay, that's really useful. And I hadn't heard about how you can record events. I think that's a real benefit of working in that environment. So let's move on now to how you came to working with the Dart programming language on AWS. And I know that you have a really interesting story about how you helped to create some libraries that made it a lot easier. Before we talk about your story of how you got Dart running on AWS for your project, let's talk about your experience before using Dart and some of the frustrations that led you to explore shifting to using Dart on AWS.
Yeah, originally I was working on AWS with Node.js projects, and I had been using Dart before that, so I knew how to read Dart code efficiently, let's say. And then I was working in this team that used JavaScript on the back end, and we're doing code reviews, right? So I'm looking at code, and I get no clues on what their functions, let's say, are returning. And I can't really see how the data flow goes in the program. So I can't really say that this looks right, because it says it's returning a list of strings. I can't say that it's correct, because there's no type signatures, etc. And there are applications in AWS Lambda can start out small, but when you have a long-running project, they might get big. So large code bases that are not typed is hard to refactor and review.
I see that I can see how that can be frustrating. So at this point, you started experimenting with Dart on AWS. Talk about your first attempts at this.
Yeah, so I was reading an article about someone that managed to get Dart running in AWS Lambda. And this was preceded by an announcement from the Dart team. They had released Dart 2.6, I believe. And that was when Dart was able to compile to a native binary that you can run independently without having installed the Dart SDK. So he copied like the Swift implementation of an AWS Lambda runtime and successfully ran Dart in AWS, which got me very curious because I knew that Dart solved a lot of problems I had with JavaScript. So I actually tried it out.
Oh, okay. Oh, that was really cool. So you tried out so you read this article about Swift on AWS, and you tried that out working with Swift and then seeing how to adapt it to use Dart. Is that right?
Well, it was based on Swift, but this guy had basically copied the architecture of the Swift Lambda runtime and just implemented it in Dart. I think his name was, I don't remember his name, but he was writing an article about it. So I took a look at his code and I tried it out and it worked fine. So I was very hopeful that this could be the solution to my problem. I just had to convince everyone else that it was a good idea.
Right. Okay. And how did you go about convincing your colleagues to try this out?
Well, I'm not sure I have, but it's hard. It's not a very popular ecosystem. It's not very many that have Dart experience or even know what it's about. But my idea is to show that it's a very viable option. And in order to do that, I had to, since there were no AWS SDK for Dart, so I couldn't really, in an honest way, say that that's a good option. So until there were an AWS SDK, I couldn't convince my coworkers. So I really had to write one myself.
Okay, and that's a great segue into the next part of your story. So eventually, we now have a AWS SDK, and you worked with a few people on that. Can you tell us about how that came together?
Yeah, well, I started out myself, and I had a look at the AWS SDK for JavaScript, and I found this pattern that there were no code for every service. There was just some generic code that loaded in some JSON files. And then it just worked. So DynamoDB or any other service just had a thin shell that loaded in a JSON file, and that turned into an API. So I saw these JSON definitions that had all the information about every service that AWS had. So I'm thinking maybe that is portable to Dart. So I was looking around, shopping around, looking at GitHub and seeing if everyone else had that idea. I found this project, let's say, that Istvan had made. And he had implemented three services. But I thought that maybe with my approach, you could implement all the services at once. So I discussed with Istvan this idea, and he was really a fan of the idea. He thought maybe this is like the breaking... This is how Dart will get a complete SDK. So we just started working and prototyping this SDK from these JSON definitions we found in the AWS SDK for JavaScript.
So you're going through all the services and then picking up this JSON and then hand coding the Dart implementation based off that. Is that right?
Yeah, I was talking to Istvan, and he thought that we should, to a large extent, we should keep as much type information as possible because we didn't want the dynamic feel that JavaScript had. We wanted to have a good typing so that people could get like the normal type information that you're used to in Dart. With code, you can always go into the code and see what types are returned, and you can see what happens in the code and be sure that what happens. So we got the idea we should generate code based off this JSON definitions that were properly typed, since all the JSON definitions had like names for their return types and the input types with all the attributes that were in these structs, let's say. So we actually made like a transpiler for these JSON files that transpiled from JSON to Dart.
Okay, that's fascinating. And how many services have you generated using that so far?
I think we've published 217 on Pub. One service is actually handmade. It's called Document Client. And it's there's a document client for JavaScript that enables you to use native types, and it will translate to DynamoDB types. So I just made like a handwritten version out of that from that to Dart.
That's really impressive. Do you know what percentage of the entire possible SDK that represents?
I think we got all the services except one. There's one service that's called EC2. You spoke about it earlier. And it has its own protocol that you have to implement specifically for that service. And we haven't gotten around to it. I don't use it, and I don't think Istvan uses it. So we haven't seen the need to implement that soon. But we're working on it, and we're doing this in our spare time. So, whenever time comes, we might do it.
That's really amazing that you're able to create that transpiler, generate all of these SDK links to the services. So one question that I have is, once these are auto-generated, do you have to go through some kind of validation check, an automated one, a manual one? Is there any additional hardening that's required after you do the transpiling?
Well, the AWS SDK is structured in a way that there is five different protocols that are, all the services are in one of those five protocols. So you have REST and you have XML-based APIs and so on. And we test those five protocols more than we test everything else. So they have to be as good as possible. And then the generated services are not very complicated in themselves, but they rely on these five protocols that they belong to. And if it compiles, the types should be right, at least. And then it's up to these protocols that they'll work.
Thanks for taking us through that. I'd like to shift now to talking about the particular use case that you have in production. So now that you have this Dart code running in AWS Lambda, can you describe for the listeners the type of application it is and the other parts of AWS that fit into this architecture that you created?
Yeah, so I tried to rewrite the existing Lambdas we have in Node.js. I tried to rewrite them in Dart, and it worked. But the rest of the team saw no reason to just merge new code into production, code that already works as is. So new functionality is what I'm thinking of when I'm thinking of Dart. So I needed this diagnostics tool and development tool for speeding up the development process and for debugging. So that is built with Flutter Web for its front end, which is very easy to distribute compared to a regular app. And then the back end is Dart Lambdas that are running as usual, as the usual AWS stack you'd have.
Okay, oh, that's interesting. So the diagnostic tool, so is that, for example, you're looking at creating some kind of analytics charts and things like that on the front end?
Yeah, it does a few things. Like it will check configuration through all our environments and compare them, and it can get you answers that you're looking for very quickly without going through like Postman and stuff. And it can do, I've added a lot of things client side that helps you see what's wrong or to find the answer you're looking for.
Thanks for explaining the high level architecture. So I think that's very interesting to hear about a real world use case of not only Dart on AWS, but a Flutter web application that's being used. And what's your development workflow? Do you run tests locally and then deploy into the AWS cloud, or do you run your tests all? Do you run everything in the cloud?
Well, I do test locally. Like you do unit tests as usual, and then you have this serverless application model tool. It's a SAM CLI tool that helps you run your stack locally. You can try it out to see that environment variables are set correctly and etc. And we'll also check that you have your what is it called? It's called IAM. It stands for something. It's like your user has the rights to access certain resources. That can get pretty tricky in AWS. You want to get that right before you deploy. And that's a good help to use the SAM CLI tool to check that.
And just to clarify, for when you're running Dart in Lambdas, are you compiling it using Dart to native, or are you using the Dart VM, the just-in-time interpreter?
No, I haven't used the VM, actually. I think you'd have to create like your own container somehow and deploy the container alongside with your application. So I haven't really gone into that. I've only tried the compilation to native step. And it doesn't differ much from, let's say, TypeScript, where you do you compile your application before running it. So it's just a regular compile run cycle.
One thing that's important for developers when they have code in production is being able to monitor that code and get information about errors or exceptions in order to help them with debugging. How have you approached that with this project?
Well, I'm no expert, and I've only had a look at what my colleagues and other people in the industry does. But the usual approach is that you just make sure to log your errors structured and make them available to CloudWatch, let's say, or I think it's called X-Ray, if you want even finer logs to see what's happening in your application. And then you have the CloudWatch alarms that can tell you when you have a lot of, let's say, 400 or 500 HTTP codes on your application, and you can go in and you'll be able to query your logs in a way that you'll find your error pretty quickly.
With your implementation of Dart and Lambdas, are you using the new runtime that was launched by AWS? I think a few months ago they launched a runtime for AWS Lambda. And then they also have AWS Amplify. Are you leveraging any of those, or is it more of what you created yourself initially?
No, I definitely tried out the official one when it came out, and I actually spoke to the guy that made it. I gave him some feedback. You could tell that it was inspired from the unofficial one. That it was very much like the one I used previously. But it works very good, and I have really no complaints on the official runtime for Dart from AWS. But I haven't tested out AWS Amplify. That's not the kind of application we do, so I haven't had the time. I would have used Firebase probably, so I don't know what I would use Amplify for.
Okay. And one last question on AWS. So I know, personally speaking, and I'm sure that many others, as soon as they log into AWS console, it looks extremely intimidating. You have all these services or all these knobs that you have to figure out how to set. What kind of advice could you give for someone who's just getting started in order to kind of get going and not feel too overwhelmed by it?
I would definitely set up a goal to begin with. Like, what do you want to build? So you don't go into the console and shop and try to think of an application you want to do after you've gone into the console. I think you would like to specify exactly what it is that you want to build and then go from that. Google, like, how does one create a database in AWS? And then just focus on that. And then you might think, oh, maybe I want to use recognition to do face recognition. So you find every Lego piece before you start putting them together. And then I would totally recommend to check out like blogs and documentation. There is a lot of good online courses you can take. I think I took one myself for a long time ago. And just get into it. You know, you find your way along the way.
Yeah, I think that's definitely good advice. Having a goal is important. It helps to steer you and keep you focused. So let's move on to the next topic, which is the open source project that you have on GitHub right now for the AWS client. What's the current state of this project? Is it stable enough for people to generally use for their quote-unquote mission-critical workloads?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, it works for me, but that doesn't say much. I don't know the use cases for all people. I know that the other SDKs for JavaScript, let's say, they have a bunch of, they have like 260 issues on GitHub. I mean, they all have bugs, even the Java and Go SDKs, they all have more than 100 issues on each repository. So I wouldn't bet my life on that it's good to use in production. But if you're brave enough, I think you should try it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that there are a lot of benefits from it. And being open source, it makes it available for anyone to, if they find something, to help and fix it. How many contributors do you have right now in this project?
Well, it's mostly me and István that works on it. But we've had contributors, you know, fixing small stuff they can find. They're doing what they can and fixing whatever bug they're having. But it's a big project. It's complicated. Everybody doesn't have experience in transpilers, let's say, or the methodology you would have. And then AWS is complicated in general. Like the protocols I was talking about, it's very hard to know exactly what AWS wants. We learned through reverse engineering the other SDKs, and it's hard to know exactly what it should look like. So now we don't have any more active contributors more than me and István.
Okay, and if there's some listeners out there that have some experience with this and want to get involved, how can they do that?
Well, they could always check out the readmes on the repository. Just check it out and perhaps run the generator, see what happens. Change a little bit in the code and generate again and see what happens in the code. It's quite fun to see that perhaps 2,000 lines of code can generate 1.4 million lines of code, and it has a big impact. If you fix one bug in the generator, it might fix hundreds of services bugs.
Yeah, that's exciting. I will definitely go in there and try it out. And I hope that we can get some more people involved in this, because this is a really fascinating and important project that you're working on.
Yeah, and we're also we're on a service called Gitter. It's like a social media connected to the GitHub repos that you want to discuss about. So we're usually hanging out on Dart's Gitter, and there's a Dart server channel that we hang out in and discuss. And if you have any questions, we're usually online. And you can, of course, always file an issue on GitHub or ask for a feature.
Okay, that sounds really good. So those are all the topics that I wanted to cover today. Thanks, Jonathan. Really appreciate your time sharing your experience with us today. Do you have any final thoughts or tips to share with developers?
Well, I don't know. I look forward to Dart getting the non-nullability by default. I think that will help Dart a lot. I think that's what makes it or breaks it when you look at things like TypeScript and Dart and you're trying to choose. And I think the non-nullability part is very important. So I think something will happen when that comes out and is stable. I think that will be very positive for the Dart community.
Yeah, definitely. That's something that we've been hearing a lot about. So I'm looking forward to it too. And you mentioned that you're on Gitter. Are there any other ways that people could connect with you on social media?
Yeah, sure. I have a Twitter and I'm on LinkedIn. But I think Gitter is good to discuss developing in general. If you have any questions about Dart, it's a lot of helpful people. It's a very welcoming community.
That sounds fantastic. So thanks a lot, Jonathan. Hope you have a good rest of your day.
You too. Thanks.